Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Could God make a pie so big that even he couldn't eat it? Now it's, if Joey Abs had a finisher, what would it be?
Come on to the rock show. Come on to the people show. Come on to the premiere show. SmackDown.
It is the 6th of January in the year of our Lord 2000. There's no video games released because it is a very bad idea to be releasing games just after Christmas. But luckily for you, if you had money, for the sixth week in a row, The World Is Not Enough is undefeated at the box office. And what feels like the 300th week in a row, God has abandoned us because Westlife's cover of I Have a Dream is still number one in the charts.
Oh, what a shame.
But somewhere in the little world of wrestling and American wrestling was a company called WWF. And they had a little old show called SmackDown. But what happened on that show, you ask? Is this when that product started getting good? I hear people going. Will there be test jokes? I hear the demand. The answer to all these questions and more can only be answered right here at the Call All It Classic SmackDown Review with yourself, Tom Campbell, fresh and healthy, and Mathew, nearly dead.
Oh, I miss you this week. I miss you. I can't touch your face. I can't touch my own face at the moment. But it's so if you wonder why it sounds like we are distant, we aren't emotionally, but we are physically this week because Mathew selfishly took a trip to a Schengen country.
And a third world country known as Germany.
And what happened, Math? Where are you?
Well, Germany was fine. You know, they don't have coronavirus over there. They have sparkling coronavirus.
It's your favourite one.
Yeah, my favourite coronavirus. So, yeah, I went over for DubXDub, or VXV, as they call it over there, 16-carat tournament. And it appears to be the last event before the entire world went, oh, this is a serious thing. Right, we should actually act upon it and stop these things. And it was worth it, you know? It was a hell of an event. I could go on and on and on about how good it was. But the important bits are the fact that everyone that we've been in touch with from all around the world, there was Canadians there, Germans, Poles, and all the rest, we've all been checking on ourselves and making sure we're all right. No one's got any issues. And so far, so good. The only person has had any issues, I won't say his name, but he got mono and went to the hospital in Germany. And they were quite keen to stress that, no, it was not coronavirus. It was the kissing disease, and he got it by not kissing. So he was very good about that. I think it's what like 10-year-old people call it. But
is it the ultimate kissing disease, love?
Oh, well, love will fall apart in the end or whatever. What is that? Mono disease.
Sodium glutamate.
Yeah, monocolecystis. You find him in Final Fantasy V. It's, yeah. Oh, good. The first thing for WebMD is the kissing disease. So it's not just me. Anyway, so that was nothing to do with corona or anything else like that. However, everyone else is advised, wherever possible, to self-isolate. And I have just been to a country where not just Germans, but Italians as well. They had the showcase event. And you should have heard the crowd's reactions when they went from Northern Italy. And the entire crowd went, whoa.
Oh, Christ.
But no one was shaking hands. No one was kissing. It was all like bro forearms and how you doing and all that. I came back and, you know, Mr. Pacitti, you know, I went, hey, boss, when's good for the podcast? And they were like, are you joking? How about we give it a week and a bit, right? Because the Surgeon General does say it can take up to 14 days. And that's fair enough. I did get there Thursday and leave Monday. So if by Wednesday this week I'm feeling okay, I think I'll go outside and, you know, talk to people. But it is right, though, Tom.
Yeah.
People will look at this as an overreaction, especially because it's an absolute destruction of the indie scene and wrestling at the minute. But at the same time, people are going, well, the numbers aren't that high. Yeah, this is the reason why. I'm just going to echo what my housemate who works at the hospital says. The numbers right now, we can cope with if you have the coronavirus. If they double, triple, or have a few zeros on the end, then it's going to be a serious, serious problem. So
hence why we're all taking precaution where we can. That's why self-isolating is happening. So if you have wondered where Matthew Gregg has been, because you have been conspicuous by your absence on the Cultaholic podcast for the last couple of weeks, it's obviously Matthew was in Germany for DubXDub, and now he is self-isolating.
Yeah. That's such a lovely term, isn't it? Matthew can't come out and play. He's self-isolating.
He's self-isolating. Do you know what?
By the way, a quick thing, Tom, before we get into this. It was interesting. Stupid phone making noises. Sorry, I'll put that on silent. And, well, there's no reason I have it on silent if I'm not leaving the house.
Exactly.
Sweet. the fact that I didn't know if there was going to be one or not because I misread Pacitti's message and saw that there was one updated. My mum was very upset. She's like, why aren't you on there? I'm like, no, Mom, I'm self-isolating. I'm supposed to be doing this. But I went and watched it, and I thought, oh, well, let's see what they say. And Jack just quickly does the, if you like, a lot of wrestling. Well, Matthew's not here. Here's Tom. I'm like, what? There's nothing to say. Like, oh, yeah, Matthew can't come in because he might be dead. Or the coronavirus is keeping him away. It's just like, Matthew couldn't be asked to come in. Is Tom? I'm like, what?
We do touch on why you're absent, but it's much later in the show. I was a guest on the show. I scrub my hands for 20 seconds and of all responsibility why it wasn't explained in the opening moments. But it's nice.
I knew you had. Sorry.
We have this time now where we can address where you have been.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Pontius Pilate. I know I could lie upon you.
Pontius never looked as good as I do in a suit. But
and Pontius Pilate never had a video downvoted as quickly as the one I did on Cultaholic. Yeah. But anyway, enough talk of this rubbish. Tom, there's a bit on this lovely show that we do, and it's very flattering, actually, to see the comments online saying, where is it? Where's the SmackDown?
Yeah,
thank you. But the bit that we usually do in this segment is we cut to you live with pages and pages of old Wrestling Observer newsletter, and you let us know what's happening in the wonderful world of wrestling, as reported by Mr. Davey.
We shall indeed. But so thank you very much if you have got in touch and asked where the show has been. I think now, I mean, the reason that this show has been absent is nothing to do with you being isolated. The reason this show has been off for a couple of weeks is because I was poorly, not coronavirus related, a different kind of poorly, as my doctor has told me, so it's fine. And then I lost my voice, so I couldn't record it anyway. But it's fine, together again, like the Muppet said, it's all good. And this is indeed the point where we get back to normal. Wrestling Observer, from this particular week, it is the first Wrestling Observer of the brand spanking new century, and we are reflecting on an up and a down for World Championship Wrestling. Okay, the up is New Japan and WCW presenting Tokyo Dome 2000, big old World's Collide show in Japan. Do you have many memories of Tokyo Dome 2000, Matthew?
Absolutely not. unless, was that the one with Onita on it? Let me have a quick look. So this isn't me recorded, and the first picture is Chris Benoit. That's a good start, isn't it?
It's always a great start for any wrestling production.
It's not the one with Onita. No, not seeing this one. Why don't you fill us in with all the gaps?
Well, okay. So this was a huge show out of the Tokyo Dome. I just got some notes here regarding WCW's involvement in it, which featured J.J. Dillon and Paul Orndorff as management. And Chris Benoit. Yeah, yeah. Dillon and Orndorff were there representing. Chris Benoit, Rick Steiner, and Randy Savage were performing as well. We had Chris Benoit wrestling as Wild Pegasus. Get this right. JJ Dillon, Paul Orndorff, both at ringside, along with Brad Regans, who was watching as well.
What?
I know, right?
Sorry, was Mike Graham unavailable?
I assume not. So it was Wild Pegasus. It was Benoit rekindling the fire that was Wild Pegasus, taking on Hiroshi Tenzan. He lost to Tenzan. That was probably the better match of the night. WCW managed to beautifully bookend this evening in the Tokyo Dome with one of the best matches and the worst match. So Chris Benoit as Wild Pegasus lost to Tenzan in a fine encounter. And also on this particular night, we had Rick Steiner pinning Randy Savage in the worst match of the show.
Oh, God, I have seen that. That's when Randy Savage goes to top. No, Rick Steiner goes to top rope and just falls off.
You are familiar with this one, sir.
Yes.
I'm
a bad wrestler.
All in all, it was a good night for New Japan and WCW. However, if you were to be looking at the home figures for World Championship Wrestling, it's not a good time, according to the Wrestling Observer. Preliminary figures indicate that Starrcade was a gigantic disappointment, drawing 0.3 in the buy rate. That's a pretty miserable buy rate. It was only slightly better than Fall Brawl, which was the lowest buy rate for either of the two big companies in the history of pay-per-view. What a night Starrcade was. Of course, a lot of people remember Starrcade 99 as the night that kind of signaled the end of the career of Bret Hart versus Goldberg. If life was a video game, Bret Hart hopefully should have hit a save state just before facing Goldberg that he could have come back to at a later date, but he didn't. At this point, the plan looks to build for Goldberg's return at Uncensored in Miami, and we'll see how that goes down. I did find an amazing story about Starrcade, but it's nothing to do with the American broadcast of Starrcade. It's actually to do with the German broadcast. Would you like to hear it,
Ben? Oh, was that on DSF?
Oh, yes, it was. Look at you. Please,
go ahead.
Okay, so WCW's pay-per-views air live in Germany. Normally, they get the video feed from the US and the announcing is done in a studio in Munich. So it's bounced to Munich and then bounced back out again. However, on this occasion, the German crew were flown to Washington, D.C., and they did live commentary for the German announce team. They were joined on commentary by a new face to the German commentary team, a comedian by the name of Tom Gerhardt. Tom's big party piece for comedy in Japan came a decade before this, in which he used to go on stage dressed as a giant penis. And whilst on stage, he would pretend to ejaculate on the audience. Comedy! Just going to let that sink in for math.
That was good. I mean, it's like, and did they cut, like, on the modern WWE pay-per-views and go, here's the Spanish announce team, here's the Klingon announce team, and here's the yes, you can tell which one's the German team.
Sadly, he wasn't in full phallic get-up for the actual program. But it's all right.
No wonder do such a low buy rate.
It's all right, though, because whilst he didn't look like a dick, he did make a dick of himself. He was doing heel commentary, getting himself over throughout the entire night. He constantly questioned Disco Inferno's sexuality, which is very tone deaf in 2020. You can have an idea what he said. Just kept referring to Medusa's nice tits. He kept referencing the fact that the punches in the ring weren't actually making contact. Calling out the fact that this wrestling stuff is fake and he could beat any of them up. There was a point in the show, which you may remember, where Chris Benoit throws out an open challenge for the US title. I believe it was an open challenge to a ladder match. As soon as he threw out the open challenge, spectators around the German announce table saw Tom Gerhardt jump up on the table and declare himself the challenger for Chris Benoit, which was thankfully ignored by the cameras. So this guy was quite the treat. Apparently, it all transpired. This was done because WCW were having a house show at in Oberhausen.
Yes.
And the plan was for Tom Gearhart to wrestle Berlin. And that's what this was building to. But what a backhanded way to build to a house show match on your biggest show of the year.
Yep. I mean, I can't argue with that. But that little tour of Germany ended up being very good for them, I believe. Given how low attendances were the rest of the year, I believe they... Oberhausen... it's basically a place where it's mostly for people to come visit for events and bands and things like that. So that actually did a good number for them.
It was.
I mean, why am I trying to defend WCW here? You know, I've just been at Oberhausen, Germany. Like, hey, Jeremy, Tom, you can besmirch the good name of, Wild Pegasus all you like, but you may...
You made one comment about my friends in Deutschland.
Exactly. And so my best friends are Deutschland.
So my best friends
are giant penises.
Ich bin ein Berliner. That sums up some of the highlights from the Wrestling Observer. A lot of other stuff that Dave talks about this week is like looking back on the century in professional wrestling and all that stuff. As we welcome in a brand new era to not just the world, but to the World Wrestling Federation. And this is where we go over to Matthew Gregg to talk us through the first SmackDown of the brand new millennia.
Oh, yeah, moving on from the German version of Art O'Donovan to the first Raw of 2000 recap looks like the first Raw of 1999, as we get a world title change. Triple H books himself versus Big Show, and thanks to DX's interference, Big Show gets kicked in the dick, pedigreed, and we get green and black balloons falling from the ceiling. Ah, so nice. We're in Orlando, Florida. So that's a nice place to be.
Isn't it nice to see crowds?
Isn't it nice? Yeah.
Look at all those people gathered together.
Right. I've forgotten what they look like. And Stephanie McMahon backstage says how great it is that Triple H beat Big Show, but admonishes / expositions how D-Generation X weren't able to beat The Rock on Monday night. Even if Foley interfered to help The Rock, there's still three of them. It's a good point. Numbers don't lie. Mm-hmm. Stephanie will let Brody know what they're going to do with him later on. Brody says, oh, gee, thanks. X-Pac tonight gets Big Show. X-Pac quotes, again. And Billy Gunn takes on both members of the Acolytes. Billy Gunn complains, but Triple H says he is also sacrificing. Are you ready? He's going to enter himself into a lottery to wrestle a random member of the roster. He then makes out in front of DX. Stephanie McMahon is sadly not dressed as Big Show after last week's Mankind cosplay. So that's a thread that never got resolved. Well, you know. And so before we get onto that, there's a bunch of stuff to recap then. First of all, Big Show losing his title was for the best. Definitely helped a Triple H mega push, which is actually finally gaining momentum. It's finally where they wanted it to be a few months ago. And Big Show was just dying a death. Oh, sorry, everybody using those. Good memories of seeing this recapped, and it was like, oh, great. Couldn't be happier for Triple H to take the title off someone.
It felt like the Big Show experiment was a massive failure. It really did. And what's frustrating is that you've got a guy who, with the right frame of mind and with consistent booking, could have been your top guy at this point. But like the stories he was entangled in just were so unkeeping with a giant. The whole like fighting the big boss man, because you know the whole death of his dad thing. It was stuff that didn't suit a giant of a character. I feel like there was such an opportunity missed with Big Show to be the one guy.
Right. I mean, he got a good push as he was going to get during this crazy period, which I think we go over every week, but it does need to be said of, hey, we mean Austin's out and Undertaker's out. and Test sucks. But we can't put the title on this guy because then we have nothing for us. So, you know, he was just the guy that they needed at that point. And luckily, later on, way later on, because of course in wrestling, him and Sheamus, amongst other times, Big Show was great. That was the time when they booked him exactly as he should have been here, but under nicer circumstances. So, and we get the intro.
That is now how the intro will be known.
Come along, sing along, in other words. And we start off with X-Pac versus Big Show. X-Pac gets attacked as he does his obnoxious posing and tongue sticking out. Big Show then pounds away until the referee tries to stop his big, nasty bastard rage. But he can't, so he DQs Show. X-Pac attempts to attack Show with a chair after the bell, but Show is emotionally charged, according to Michael Cole, and no-sells it, and destroys X-Pac some more. Then he destroys the referee. Then the emergency referees enter, take a look at Big Show, and leave due to a lack of union or health benefits.
That's it. They came down and went, we've got to stop him. Actually, no, we don't, because we're not insured for this. We'll leave it.
We had a whole storyline. We're scabs. You're all right. Anyway, the more people Big Show destroys, the more people cheer him. So having a vengeful Big Show destroying DX every week is a good Big Show.
So can we, right? So that's the first match of the night here on the first SmackDown of the Year of Our Lord 2000, right? Mm. So X-Pac beat the Big Show by DQ.
Mm-hmm.
So let's put a little tick. That's one DQ tonight so far.
Oh, that's not a good omen.
One DQ so far tonight. One match ends by DQ tonight. Yeah. This is probably the Big Show needed to be relit. And I guess battering X-Pac was the way to do it. I guess.
Yeah. When in doubt, beat up X-Pac.
If in doubt, beat up X-Pac. One thing that we haven't reflected on is the fact that this show once again begins with our new favourite returning trope, which is DX Dissension! Are they gonna fall out? Oh, not again! I think this is now three times in as many weeks where the show has been built around, can DX get along?
More like Dissension X.
Oh, they're friends, really.
Yeah, psych.
You fell for it again. No, we didn't. You're a bunch of idiots.
The cerebral assassin means he thinks better than you.
Nothing cerebral about your assassin. You're literally stood in the hallway shooting.
Literally going up to babies and going, got your nose. Just kidding.
Oh, 37 times later, even the baby's fed up with that.
Pedigree to the small child. Backstage, Jericho says teaming with China is a fate worse than death.
Oh, Christ.
Whereas, I'm looking for the lie. As soon as China starts talking, Michael Cole does us a favor and starts talking over. Don't know why.
Michael Sadly, Cole's very chatty in this. Like,
he is.
We're at this funny point in commentary where Michael Cole is spelling out everything that we see on screen, and I never like that style personally of like spelling out everything as it's happening. Like King the Rock's walking down the corridor. Yeah, I know.
he's walking, King. This has been an alliance with Uggs. I'll defend Cole and say, look, there's so much lore and stuff going on nowadays that we do need that guy like a navigational system he can't turn off, letting you know what's happening. It's weird that he's talking over people on the mic. So either, because this thing's done in post, that means that either they needed him to add a bit more exposition because it wasn't quite clear, or they heard China talking and went, oh, Cole, overdub it, please. Well, we're essentially speaking Spanish. Sadly, Michael Cole is explaining that Stephanie has, oh, God, yeah, here we go. Of course, Michael Cole's having to talk a lot because he's explaining to the people watching at home who have brains that because both of them pinned that match with two refs who both ruled they won, Both China and Jericho are the Intercontinental Champion. Look, if they're blaming Stephanie McMahon for this mess, then it's okay. As a, oh, it's not a bad point if the bad person's doing it. But that aside, what a stupid angle.
What a mess WWF walked into the new millennium with. Like, just staggered in. World champion, The Big Show, who isn't touching the sides at all in terms of support.
Who's medium show.
But it's okay. Who's your workhorse champion, your intercontinental champion? Oh, it's Chris Jericho. Oh, that's okay. And China. What? At the same time? Yes. Right. Cool. So the records will always say at the beginning of the 21st century, Chris Jericho and China were the IC champion.
Yeah. Move to Jericho's music. Play Jericho's music. Move to Jericho's music now. And China.
Oh, that's a lovely Joe Hendry, Joseph Connors callback.
Thank you. We talked about Joseph Connors quite a bit in Germany because the Irish lads were there. And the lovely guys. But they like the punchline is they hate NXT UK. So the joke is like, oh, I can't wait for like Timothy Thatcher to appear and, you know, have a great feud with Joseph Connors. And then me and some other people going, you know, he had a really good run in WCPW, right? And they're like, ha ha ha. Like, no, seriously. They go, what?
He was the WCPW champion.
Yeah. Like, you've just told them, like, the queen is dead. They're like, what? What? Joseph Connors was good? Like, you know, like, and everyone like joins in going, yeah, no, really, really. And so we basically said, like, you know how Irish people love Ryan Smile? Yeah, it was like that, but Newcastle.
that's a good shout, that is. Of course, yeah. One of our, actually, another former WCPW champion has hung up his tights in the last couple of days.
Oh, right, I was going to say Martin Kirby. That doesn't feel real.
What it's like, and you put it best on social, mate, when you said, like, there's enough bad news as it is. Can't have Martin Kirby retire now.
Yeah, like no one's going to know. So I remember when like 100,000 people died. Also, Martin Kirby retired.
Devastating. Like,
I felt really bad when Martin Kirby retired and give a toss about the rest of the planet. Oh. But anyway, we could talk about a good hour and a half about how good Martin Kirby was and all the matches we have. I mean, for the purposes of this, we'll have to move on because really his career was effing amazing. And the consistency in like, anyway, sorry, like I said, I'm going to stop myself there. We're told police are outside to get Mick Foley in case he even thinks about entering the arena. We then cut and show that there's one policeman outside twirling a stick like it's the 1950s. I'm sure Sergeant O'Reilly will be able to stop Foley. Not like SWAT teams or anything. It's one old bloke. Anyway, China and Jericho, they call themselves the IC champions versus the Hollies. And both China and Jericho have co-intercontinental champion in their graphic. And Cole explains that if China loses to Holly or anybody, then Jericho loses it as well. This stupidness brought to you by WWF The Music Volume 4. WrestleMania 15 on DVD. Yes, that newfangled thing that the rich kid next door to you has, but you don't because you're poor. And Christ on the bike, AOL 5.0.
Yeah!
The future is now, Tom.
Oh, mate. Bloody love AOL. This.
I did think about this, Tom. We haven't actually sat down and reviewed WWF The Music Volume 4, so I thought I'd get your opinion on the track listing.
Oh, okay.
I'll copy and type it out, so we're doing this.
I was hoping we were going to review AOL 5.
Not quite AOL 4.
I wanted to gush about AOL. Connie. Fancied her. You could download Connie in a heartbeat. Love Connie.
You know, it wouldn't take you a heartbeat. It would take you many heartbeats. It'd
take me up to 4 hours. Download Connie. That dress, it's all the internet. Whoa!
Actually, saying that, AOL 5.0, I believe, is the one that caused the massive lawsuit. Yeah, here we go. Quick look on Wikipedia before you move on to this so-called wrestling podcast. In 2000, AOL was served with an $8 billion lawsuit alleging that AOL 5.0 software caused significant difficulties for users attempting to use third-party internet service providers. The bastards. Oh. The lawsuit sought damages of up to $1,000 for each user that had downloaded the software site at the time of the lawsuit. AOL later agreed to settlement of $15 million without admission of wrongdoing. Yeah, they're pretty close, $8 billion, $15 million. AOL software was then given a feature called AOL Dialer, and this feature allowed users to connect to the ISP without running the full interface. Oh, okay. Good for AOL. Isn't that interesting? So here we have Break Down the Wall. Track one, Jericho, absolutely. Yeah, I'd call that a banger. What do you think, Tom? Yay or nay?
Banger.
Mm-hmm.
Definite banger. Love that one.
Big Show's theme, which is just called Big here. That was always weird to me, like one word, Big.
It's just like, what is he? Well, he's Big. Oh, we'll just call it Big.
It felt like they typed that name down and then didn't come back to change it later on. You know, when you think of something else. No Chance in Hell.
Oh, that's classic. It's Vince McMahon's theme.
Absolutely. Sexual Chocolate by Mark Henry.
Oh, it's great. It's always a great icebreaker for a really offensive segment.
Yes, I agree. This is a test. Also, the name of Test's entire WF run during this point.
Test music's amazing.
I never thought much of it, to be honest. It's just all, this is a test. Like, Wreck.
By our friend music, Mankind. Yeah.
That's right, I. Oh, here we go. Oh, hell yeah. Perform my H-Blocks. Known for their cover of The Power.
This is that. Sometimes I drink a little beer. Sometimes I make a little mess. Sometimes I get awful. A little angry. Is that it?
Awful. Yes, that is it. Not quite the My Way of 99, but Danger at the Door by D-Lo.
Oh, I love D-Lo's theme.
I like that. That's a good one. Oh, Blood Brother, Christian's solo theme.
Nice. No, yeah, that was all right.
Didn't get used enough.
I think his later music would be better.
Oh, here we go. His Zeppelin Stairway to Heaven, Ass Man by Billy Gunn.
I think I Got It All was a superior track.
Well, let's move on. Ministry by The Undertaker. That's the one that sounds a lot like the other one, but has sleigh bells. My Time, Triple H and China's theme. Well, not for long, hun. On the Edge by Edge. Which
is that? You Think You Know Me?
Yes, it is. On the Edge, that's something Lita would do later on. And Know Your Role by The Rock.
And was that The Rock's theme, or was that just a random song? Because every so often, The Rock would just chuck a random song on.
Oh, because Pie would be on Volume 5. But no, Know Your Role is just the theme as it currently sounds.
And I remember this because they had, right, so on the CD version of The Rock's theme, it plays for about 3.5 minutes. And then in like an Easter egg type moment occurs where The Rock just jumps in and goes, The Rock says, you can take your CD, shine it up, turn it sideways and stick it straight up your can. Yes, that was just on the album version. And there was this one occasion on Raw, I think it was in 2003, where The Rock turned up, did some stuff and the music was playing and he was in the ring posing for so long that we heard that bit. So obviously they'd ripped it off the music volume 4 because you heard the bit where The Rock says, like, take this CD, turn it sideways. So I enjoyed the fact that as Rock was posing at the end of this episode of Raw in 2002, maybe 2003, they were playing the music directly off WWF, the music volume 4.
That is amazing. If anyone knows that episode, please get back to me. Please, I've never heard that before. I need to find it. Man, Tom, that'd be an amazing find if you knew.
Definitely
that.
Happened. It definitely happened. Someone
Thank
must know.
You. And if not, we'll just edit it to make it look like he did.
Exactly. And we control also, the means of communication.
That's it. You get it. Also, if you download the digital version, you get two bonus tracks. Today, which is the Four Horsemen Hall of Fame induction theme. I listened to it. It's very Hallmark advert. Not a fan. And you hear the voiceover going, a touching story about heartbreak, sadness, and turning on Sting 37 times. And the other one is She Looks Good, which is Eve's theme. That's the one that goes, she looks good to me. She got everything I want, everything I need. Women are sex objects. So at least that one's timeless. Anyway, so I thought we'd go for that rundown there. Back to the match. And we'll cut the good bit, which is the Hard Holly dropkick. And it's so good this time that makes both Holly's pose, even Crash, on the apron. Of note, Crash Holly's wearing non-hardcore Holly gear for the first time. dissension in the Holly ranks.
So it's suggesting the Crash is about to go off and do something pretty magical.
Exactly. And it's also, I think one of them thought Assman was the superior theme. And the other one was like, no, it's the one. And when he tags in and gets the walls, but Hardcore is able to stop Jericho that tries tagging, but China turns her back on him. I mean, don't know what he was expecting there. Jericho clotheslines Hardcore to the outside, and China motivates Jericho, but he pushes her. So she goes, balls, clotheslines him, sends him into the ring, where he falls victim to the Falcon Arrow from Hardcore Holly, which, as we all know, no one kicks out the Falcon Arrow. This was a tag match, so obviously the title wasn't on the line, but Cole wonders, how can they possibly hold the title together?
I do love tag teams don't get along. It's my favourite trope in wrestling.
Yeah. Sorry, I forgot to be quiet there. I've got the window open and it felt a bit awkward talking about Ass Man and sexual chocolates as people walking past. I'm like, Jesus.
It's fine. There's worse going on in the world right now.
It's like, don't make eye contact. It's all right.
I quite enjoyed the sound of seagulls earlier. When you were describing the WWE music before, them? I heard seagulls. It was beautiful.
That would be fun in the bins. Oh. Anyway, Midian Kind is hanging out. I just ruined the joke there. Sorry, Mankind is hanging out in Universal Studios. Well done, Matthew. He tries giving a kid an autograph, but the child is repulsed. The dad tells him to leave him. So Mankind wishes him, have a bad day, and then runs off.
So this is a series of segments that run throughout tonight, featuring Dennis Knight, a.k.a. Midian, dressed as Mankind, just dicking around the theme park.
Yeah, you're doing a very good Mankind impression, has to be said.
Yeah, very good.
Just being pathetic as possible. And Triple H and Stephanie McMahon are watching this and wonder, they go, wow, that's weird. Why is Mankind in Florida? Just completely say, like, no, that is Mankind. What are you on about? Tori and her vacuum sealed outfit interrupt, and she wants to use the toilet as all the other ones are occupied. Stephanie's like, yeah, sure, fine.
Tori's walked into Stephanie McMahon's personal dressing room, holding her stomach, to say, can I use your bathroom? All the others are taken. Stephanie says, yeah, sure. So Tori scurries into the bathroom, right, and shuts the door. We then cut to the corridor, which shows the Acolytes walking, and the first words that we hear after Tori has gone into the toilet holding her stomach is Michael Cole saying, well, things can't be good for Mr. Ass.
Oh, good call, Tom. Yeah,
that's incredible timing. Like, I love this show. Is just so blinkered to stuff like that happening.
Cole's required exposition. Well, Tori's got to...
Talking of badasses, Billy Gunn's about to face the Acolytes.
Yes.
Anyway, that was the only point I wanted to make. Carry on, my friend.
After the break, Road Dogg wants to know what's up with Triple H and Stephanie. What? No, I've written that badly. Road Dogg wants to know what's up with Triple H. And Stephanie tells Road Dogg, well, why don't you go ask him yourself? He's in the bathroom. Road Dogg, oh, okay. Goes in. Tori, Road Dogg, what? Steph? Stephanie, oops, sorry, I forgot. Oh, that wacky Steph infection.
That's Steph, eh?
It's good job Tori's not affiliated with anybody right now, or things would look bad for Road Dogg, eh?
Oh, Jesus Christ, yes.
Bad ass and bad face. On Raw, the Mean Street Posse had the Acolytes and a arm tied behind their back match, which always goes well in wrestling. And that didn't last long as the Mean Street Posse and the Dudley Boys battered them together again. Road Dogg comments the Duds deserved a bonus for that, which Triple H hears and goes, maybe I will, Road Dogg. Maybe I will. That can happen later. Ass Man, no, the other one, versus Acolytes as part of Billy Gunn's punishment, or as Gull should have called it, gunishment. He starts off winning, but, you know, it's a handicap match with the two bruisers. Billy Gunn takes the Rikishi cell from Bradshaw. I forgot he did that, and he did that as late as the Battle Royal he was on, AEW Dynamite last year. Considering how big he is and the age he is, I love that cell. Road Dogg has seen enough, though, seen his partner getting beat up, and runs in for the DQ. Farouk gives him a spine buster that gets a big ooh from the crowd, and then they brawl at them to show their appreciation. And this seamlessly goes into backstage, Kane wanting to speak to Triple H.
I want a match with pervert Road Dogg.
Did you ever have a pervert Road Dogg action figure? They were very limited edition, but they were. It basically came with a shocked face on Road Dogg and an upset Tory in a bathroom.
That's
very
right.
Limited edition figure.
That replaced the Al Snow head thing in Walmart. That's
it
right.
It did indeed.
That's right. Anyway, Steph gives it to Kane, so to speak.
Sorry.
It's good because the way this has worked is Stephanie's right next to Triple H. Kane comes in and goes, pervert. And Steph goes, yeah, you're right, good. Yeah, you versus Road Dogg, that's fine. And he leaves. And Triple H goes, what was Kane talking about? Stephanie goes, oh, no idea. Who knows with Kane? He's so crazy. Troy's like, oh, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's not much, but it gets me going and going, nah, that was amusing. And then backstage, Road Dogg is furious he has a match. And Stephanie again is like, who? Kane? Oh, yeah, sure.
Steph is playing silly buggers here where she's like, oh, just Kane's upset with you for walking in on Tory. And Road Dogg is like, oh, she's bad news. She's setting us up for dissension in DX.
That's right.
Break it down, literally.
As presented by Lady McSteph.
Nice.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Kane versus Road Dogg. And a funny bit, Road Dogg does a spiel on the way to the ring. Oh, you didn't know? Then Kane walks down the ramp and Kane has to finish. Sorry, cook. God. And Dogg has to finish mid-sentence as he has to try to escape Kane the Wrath.
I was wondering why he was doing the full spiel if he was so terrified. But then
you didn't.
He just trails off, doesn't he?
Kane beats him up for a bit until X-Pac wanders down doing the titty grab pose to Tori. Dogg is able to get the advantage thanks to X-Pac's distraction. Cole explains Tori said X-Pac was nothing but a gentleman over the Christmas period. So for those watching at home, because hippity-hoppity.
Women of property.
Yay. You remember the song?
They're not, but at this particular time, Vince Russo-esque writing. Not even Vince Russo writing it, though, because he's over in Atlanta.
His After Effects can still be felt. And Kane didn't beat Big Show for the title, so Tori had to spend the Christmas of X-Pac. And considering all the horrible things we're saying, basically like, oh, you're somebody going to get their ass filled on TV, she came back and was like, no, he was fine. So.
But yeah, she's come back and she's really jumpy and jittery, which is why, like, if anybody says boo to Tori, they normally have a match with Kane.
Yeah, they're enjoying traumatising her, but again, she did say, no, but X-Pac was nothing but a gentleman, which is an interesting thing to say, considering he comes out here and is just like, show me your titties. And And again, Cole covers this, like, Tori's been showing, and I quote, bizarre behavior during these past few weeks. I smell something suspicious. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about the bathroom after Tori's. Anyway, Kane beats Road Dogg fairly easily.
This is, to this point, the longest match of the night.
I felt it as well.
Yeah, it really did. 5 minutes and 7 this went. And it was one of the cleaner finishes of the night, which isn't saying a lot because there were shenanigans aplenty. Other match tonight has gone either a minute or 2 minutes. This has gone 5.
Right, and then Tori was there, so there was nothing clean about it. Backstage, Rock is shown walking.
And he gets the biggest pop of the night.
What a walk.
Oh.
Triple H tells Stephanie that The Rock will be facing Kurt Angle. Stephanie, not Angle. So, yeah, and again, more very slight things there with Stephanie clearly liking Angle this early in the feud storyline thing. But never mind for that. Mankind is at Universal Studios, and he's riding the Jaws ride. And he talks about how he's not afraid of anything while boring these poor kids to death, about how he did this, how he came off Hell in a Cell. Nothing scares him. Then Jaws the Shark appears and he freaks out. Oh, my God, what was that? And he starts doing the noises he makes when he's doing punches.
These must have been so much fun to film.
And they look it. I mean, it's very late for Universal Studios. I don't know how late they're open till or whatever, but I don't really care. Anyway, 1-800 collects Slam of the Week. Triple H is sick of Blackman helping Angle, even though Blackman's trying to explain, no, but your wife. And he's like, shut up, Blackman. So on Raw, if he hits his opponent, Kane, tonight, it's Kane versus Angle, Blackman's fired. So Blackman runs in, clearly conflicted, thinks about it, and hits Angle. Because the backstage, Stephanie going, great, it's a DQ win, so Angle's still undefeated. Womp, womp.
This is how I think a mid-card heel could have become the WWE champion back in the day. Like, you just said, like, right, I want a match with you where if there's a DQ, there's a title change. And then you have your mate run out and hit you. Hey! Right. I've won! I've done it!
Yeah. We got something like that with Christian Orton at one time where Christian just, like, managed to... It was a complete dick on SmackDown going, look, Orton keeps on causing these DQs, you know, because he would annoy him so much. Orton would just go, oh, whatever. Shut up, you fanny, and just hit him with a chair. It's like, he keeps on getting DQ'd. I mean, it's just not fair on me, earning all these well-earned title shots. And Teddy Long's like, yeah, you got a good point there. All right, Orton, if you get DQ'd, then you lose the title. The referee's not looking. It just, Christian does the biggest spit I've ever seen. It's like, half a bag of phlegm goes in Orton's face when the referee's not looking. So it's like, kicks him so far in the dick, he jumps 5 feet in the air, and then it's like, right, new job. Oh, it was so good.
Amazing.
You know what else is, you know, that was good. You know what isn't good? The Rock talking about his new book.
Not The Rock Says, which is out now.
That's right. Well, if Mankind can write a book, how hard could it be for The Rock to write a book? He's smarter and sexier. And look, I got Mick Foley's book as a kid, and because I had a brother, it's like, well, I want a wrestling book. Oh, you can have The Rock's book. And my brother hated reading, but he's like, well, it's The Rock, you know? He couldn't finish it. And I went, oh, come on, lad, let me read it. And then I couldn't finish it either because it's half in character. Like, so it's like, literally, so The Rock got all the grades at school, then The Rock took the prom queen home, and then The Rock gave her the you-know-what, The Rock. And it's like, right. And it's like, so then I was, cuts the normal Rock, to then, like his matches, soak up all the good stuff and no-sell everything. The Rock was really good at I was really good at these things, and I was good, and I was fit and healthy, and I was really good. It's like, okay, Mick Foley's life is full of horrible things happening and overcoming obstacles, and The Rock is just like, well, I was just born 5'10", you know? It's like, it was all uphill struggle for The Rock.
I did a little bit of research into Joe Layden, who, that name may not jump out at you, Lord Matthew, but Joe Layden is the ghostwriter who wrote The Rock Says. And he did an interview a few years back with a San Francisco newspaper where he talked about his life as a ghostwriter. And you'll be surprised to admit, you'll be surprised to hear, when he was asked about The Rock Says, the memoir by pro wrestler turned actor The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, the book that held the top spot on the New York Times bestseller list for 5 weeks. You'll be surprised to hear that Joe Layden, when discussing it, said, "I'm not a wrestling fan. I hadn't watched it since I was a kid."
No.
Joe Layden basically talks in depth about his life as a ghostwriter, and he says he can only ghostwrite for stuff that he has no idea of to begin with. He says, because at least you've got a clean slate and you don't have too many preconceived notions. And he believes that's probably the best part of being, the best thing you can do as a ghostwriter is write stuff without any idea of what you're writing about. Which surely, to me, like, I'm not a writer. If you're a ghostwriter, I'd love to hear from you. That seems ridiculous.
Right. Imagine writing on a CV, "My best strength is being completely unqualified to write about the things I'm paid."
Yeah, it does seem... I get it to an extent, because you have to make sure that you don't sound like Joe Layden. You have to sound like Dwayne The Rock Johnson. But then what surely happens is, like, The Rock's book, you know, The Rock's book sold and went to the top of the New York bestseller list because, one, it was The Rock. And genuinely, I believe that if you wrapped up a turd in The Rock wallpaper at this point, you would have the number one kid's toy for Christmas. But also, off the heels of Mick Foley's book, which was a self-penned autobiography, there was this preconceived idea that wrestling books must be good. So that is kind of... The Rock has a lot to thank Mick Foley for helping push this book up. But unfortunately, once people opened the book, they went, "Oh, actually, this is crap." And there was never that sort of level of greatness again until Mick Foley wrote his second book.
Yeah, well, actually, no, they did interview him and goes, like, "Are you a fan of wrestling?" And he went, "Well, actually, it doesn't matter if you're a fan of wrestling." So it was their own fault. Anyway, that bad book aside, Rock has the mic. And apparently the DX handicap match was at Your Fight If You Lose handicap match, hence why Mick Foley risked his life and limb to go and save The Rock. But tonight, it's a big match field now. The Rock versus Kurt Angle for the first time. Angle gets on the mic and says he wants to be the people's champion because he won the gold medal. And he's a proper guy, not like this GQ dude in the ring. Rock responds as he knows how, as he notices Kurt Angle's gold medals. And all I put is, "Shine them up, ass." So I think he can just fill in the gaps there. Or get Joe Loden to do it. Crowd is ready for this. They are on fire after all that foreplay by Angle. They're booing him. They're loving The Rock. I mean, it's 2000. The Rock's at his prime in terms of crowd response. Angle tries escaping, but The Rock clotheslines him on the ramp. And Angle gives him a suplex on it. Weird that they're doing Mankind spots out of tribute to him. Angle dares to get on offense, so you can tell he's green. We get a giant asshole chance, reminiscent of a Tory. And then something that you often hear, a Rudy Poo chant. Anyway, Blackman runs in, and he looks like he knows he's above his pay grade here. So,
I like seeing The Rock and Blackman mix it up, though.
Right. The Rock sees him, grabs him, takes the stick, and twats Angle for the DQ. So he's still undefeated. The Rock delivers a rock bottom to Blackman and leaves, and Kurt Angle celebrates like he's just won the gold medal. And Rock sees that, isn't happy, returns to the ring, delivers the spinebuster from People's Elbow. This was all great. I haven't described the action that much because it's not that interesting hearing people going about that. But the atmosphere was insane. Kurt Angle was in the perfect position here as being just a bad'un that he did flatten him by the good'un. Rock being an A-plus player and Angle taking the time to get the shine while taking 90% of the offense and doing a much better job of it than Val Venus or whatever.
Much better. Much, much better. Kurt Angle properly rising to the occasion.
Yeah. Triple H is unhappy. Stephanie is all smiles. Oh. Edging Christian and Jeff Hardy are now going to take on Al Snow and the Dudley Boys. A lot of stuff here. Matt Hardy is hurt. He had his fingers damaged in a cage match on Raw, so I guess he's still legit injured from, I believe, Jeff landing on him.
I wasn't sure whether or not this was still the same injury or whether it was a compounded injury and he was out even further. But I assume he's still recovering from having his bell rung all those weeks back.
And Al is still feuding with Jeff, as he wants that bonus DX promised him, because less Hardys means less challenges for the New Age Outlaws. So, again, it's all coming together. It's intricacies. Al had the cage match against Jeff on Raw, and that's the... I'm not sure about the rest of the match, but the finish is vaguely famous with Al Snow going to backdrop Jeff Hardy, but instead Jeff used Al as a launch pad, just dive over, crawl over, and escape the cage. And a very nice finish.
That was a great finish, yeah. That was.
And the Dudleys walk in the ring showed me very unhappy teaming with Al Snow because nobody likes him. That's Al's gimmick right now. Nobody likes him because he's a lech, he's a betrayer, he's turned on his friends, he's just going for that book. And I wonder why there's no union in wrestling. And anyway, we have the Dudleys and Edge and Christian and Hardys together in the ring. That'll never last, Tom.
Oh, it's a beauty of a future echo, is it not?
All right. What's that word we like to use in the podcast?
Embryotic.
Ding, ding, ding. If you've got the bingo card there. Al Snow distracts the referee, so the Dudleys can double-team Jeff. Edge and Christian wrestle the Duds while Jeff takes out a pervy Al Snow who's stalking Terry at ringside with a beautiful tope. Now some quick counters. Edge nails the downward spiral to end things rather quickly. They go longer and better, but right now the audience is just getting used to these 5-minute epics. So
yeah, it seems very much an Attitude Era style match. We will get better at these. It might take a while.
Yeah, Edge and Christian seem mad even after winning. Jeez, they should be happy that there's no silly interference or whatever this time. And then Al Snow attacks the Dudleys because they failed him. No money for Al. Back to the middle of Little Yigan.
Al Snow, there is something special about Al Snow as kind of this psycho upper mid-carder. I still quite like him.
Yeah, and he's also a bit useless, which makes it funny.
Yeah, I like that it's a bit useless too.
Yeah. Anyway, back at Universal Studios, Mankind wants to go on the roller coasters, but the park is shut. Some guy won't let him go on, so Mankind tries to bribe him with a dime.
I mean, that is very in keeping with Mick Foley.
I was going to say, are we sure this is Midian? The guy calls security as he legs it. And this, okay, very, very good bit here with the security dude going, there's a masked visitor with a coin, like deadpan as hell. Like, what does he look like? Well, he's got a mask on. Also, he's got one coin.
I can't help but feel that the guy playing the security guard looked very much like a young Brad Maddox.
Oh.
Kind of like a flop.
What, he was never seen again.
He was never seen again until a dirty video emerged.
Mm-hmm. Test is here with a pop.
A diminishing pop.
Yeah, who'd have thunk it? I mean, we get reminded that Bossman and Albert beat him up last week in a handicap match. It's non-title because, oh yeah, Bossman's hardcore champion. I had forgotten. Bossman slams him, but not the Bossman slam. Well done, Matthew. That's some good typing. Yeah. and then he yells at the crowd, yeah, kiss my ass. Albert shows up and then Lawler says, Test is going to have one of those Roman noses. Roaming all over his face.
Cheeky good line from Jerry Lawler, that.
Yeah, it's a good one.
We're not long. We haven't got long left with the Boss Man and Prince Albert partnership, have we?
Oh, Tom, just you wait. Oh. Test isn't a quitter. And this is that bait and fight is destiny for the N64. We have to fight 100 opponents. He hates that.
Test isn't a quitter. He's still got his pre-order in for the 64 Double D.
He thinks he's getting a dolphin for Christmas.
He's coming out soon. He's getting a dolphin. Steph, is GameStop still open?
Imagine if they were doing the mock test guy at the Universal Studios. He legit just start crying. I want to go on Mickey's Wild Ride.
Steph. I want to go to Innovations at Epcot and play Sonic 3D.
Tom with the hottest of the references.
That was just a callback from my own life. Oh. Wanted to go to Innovations at Epcot to play Sonic 3D. Oh.
Bossman removes Test's mask because he's permanently injured on the face and smothers him with a dirty chin lock. Albert tries to interfere, but his scissors kick misses and hits Bossman, and Test inexplicably gets the win. Followed by Michael Cole echoing the thoughts of millions. Believe it or not, Test won. Afterwards, Albert and Bossman argue, but nothing happens yet. Oh. Like a candle in the wind, it's gone too soon.
Unreliable.
Anyway, Mankind wants to, here we go, here's a good bit. Mankind wants to ride the Back to the Future ride. Oh, I'll go back to January 4th, 1999, when I first won the WWF title. No, wait, I'll go back in time to March 15th, 1982, the last time my wife found me attractive and let me have sex with her.
Oh,
Christ. Jesus, that's brutal. It's good satire. And while he's going that and getting on the car, Christ, what's it called? DeLorean. I mean, it is a car, ladies and gentlemen.
It is a car. You're all right.
Back to the DeLorean when Matthew had sense. The Mean Street Posse are heading to the ring. Stephanie.
Oh.
Stephanie also working the thoughts of billions. What are they doing in the ring? And Triple H replies, oh, this is great. Okay. He says, well, they deserve their first ever win after all their hard work dealing with the Acolytes. Who is it? By God, it's Kai and Tai.
This match is...
I'm going to say, John, this is it. This is the...
This is a pivotal moment in the careers of the Mean Street Posse. This match is iconic for the Mean Street Posse.
Yes.
And you'll find out why as we go through it.
Yeah. They get ambushed early, but Taka nails the Acai Moonsault. Loud USA chants for some ungodly reason. Yeah, well done, Orlando.
God's sake, Orlando.
The Camel Clutch Dropkick combo. Can't stop that. And Funaki lands the Diamond Dust, which I always thought was Masato Tanaka's move, the Thief and Get. I'm with you, Orlando, USA.
Sadly, Jerry Lawler is part Orlando, because he talks about Kainta losing this match and then, quote, going back home to climb the Great Wall.
I think the joke is supposed to be that everyone knows that, no, they're not Chinese, they're Japanese, but it's... Lawler's so good with his lines sometimes that, you know, you end up like going, oh, don't, you can't say that.
He was trolling before trolling was a thing.
Right, right. Anyway, we get a beautiful double team from them, and it doesn't matter. That's whatever, who cares about that?
This is just entree compared to the main course.
A moosh bush. Rodney backdrops Funaki into Joey Abs, who delivers a powerbomb. Michael Cole, they call that the stock exchange. Oh my God, they had a double team finisher. And I've even written down before anything else happened, this is the best SmackDown ever. But, just you wait, but Pete Gas wants to finish. So he gets the gas mask for
yes!
two. That's two MSP finishes. Lawler, Mokke exclaims, he kicked out the gas mask. Rodney sets up the High Society, which is the blockbuster, but somehow accidentally hits it on Pete Gas and manages to land on his own head at the same time. And Lawler expresses amazement at Michael Cole knowing all these names of the Mean Street Posse's finishers.
I'm glad he did, because it stayed with me forever.
Right.
The one I forgot was the stock exchange. When I watched this back, I remember the gas mask. I remembered High Society. I forgot the stock exchange.
And even with hitting three finishes, what happens? Taka hits a top rope dropkick into the schoolboy for the win. They couldn't beat him with getting three finishes landing.
Big win for Kai and Tai.
Right, big win for Kai and Tai. If they were in Harry Potter, they would capture the snitch and still lose on point. Unbelievable. So that leaves only one guy's single finisher out. And it'll be a clean sweep. Yes. And what was Joey Abs?
I actually don't know. I wish I could remember. I'm sure Google will tell me if I type in Joey Abs finisher.
You can probably hear me type it as well. I mean, no, I'm not.
It's referring to it as the Venom Bomb, because his other ring alias was Venom.
Oh, the Crucifix Powerbomb. And there's people debating it on Forum.wrestlefigs. I thought Jerry Abbs' finisher was a gut-wrench suplex. The debate.
Do you know what? I'm looking at this same page now on forums.wrestlingfigs, and it's a yeah. It's a multi-page discussion on what were the finishers of the Mean Street Posse. I hark back to these days. I long for these right. days, Matthew. We have spent the last 6-7 days talking about the coronavirus, talking about self-isolation and illness and every time someone coughs and sneezes, like anxiety riding up in our system. That is all we've talked about. We talked about events being cancelled, shows that we love disappearing, sporting events being suspended. That is all we've talked about. It's been so miserable on planet Earth. Yet in 2011, here was a collection of people from around the world just shooting the breeze on what were the names of the Mean Street Posse's finishers. I want these days back. So badly. I miss these days.
It's like, you ever heard that thing about, could God make a pie so big that even he couldn't eat it? It's now it's, if Joey Abbs had a finisher, what would it be?
If you wish to give Joey Abbs a finisher, you must first invent the universe.
Right. You must first of all win a match. I think I'll have to like upload this on the Twitter and be like, look, if you're feeling bad, here is nearly all the Mean Street Posse finishes in one match. Because I think it's when these people go, this happened?
I think you need to upload it, most definitely.
Yeah, but never mind. There's a reason why that bit is not the most talked about segment of SmackDown. It's because this. I'm getting very hyped up now. If you can, the seagulls are flying near to the. Yeah, hello, I see you. I'll call the one on the left, Joey. The one trying to hold his tattoos, Pete Gas, at this moment. The Tumblr drawing. No, not that kind of drawing on Tumblr. The one kind where there's balls in a thing and you rotate it and have to pick one out. On who will face Triple H tonight? Who's it going to be? First pick, Andre the Giant. No, you'll have to wait for No Mercy to come out the N64 for that. Triple H isn't happy with this pick, but if Andre was here right now, he'd beat him up. Yes, no, who's the Ribber? I bet it was Jericho. Okay, so try again, and the lucky winner is the Fabulous Moolah. Triple H says, well, it'd be one for the ages, but no. Triple H has Howard Finkel draw the balls instead, because just going to be silly picks this way. But Howard Finkel somehow manages to knock over the tumbler and drop all the balls. So he just picks up one at random. And the iconic expression I can still hear all these years ago when I first saw it as a kid. It's Rikishi!
It's Rikishi!
Triple H is furious. The wrestlers all sat down backstage to say, Rikishi, Rikishi, Rikishi. Mate. This was the definition of a markout moment as a kid.
This felt so cool. The moment he said it, the entire locker room chanting Rikishi, Triple H and Steph storming off, and then the entire roster just around Rikishi in his sunglasses, who stands up, shoulders out like, all right, let's go. Oh, this was cool.
Yeah. Like that. I can still shut my eyes and remember, like, just the Rikishi, and then he just looks at Rikishi, sat down, like, nodding his head, like, yeah.
Got this.
It's on.
And it's like, and there's part of you that goes, oh, he's going to beat him. Oh, nice. Yeah. There's part of you that still does. It's
and
so
I love
good.
It. I love it so much that I'm going to ignore the fact that a lot of this didn't make any sense.
No.
Because if the tumbler was rigged, and you assume it was, and then the idea was that like Finkel ruined it by bumbling over, then why did they have two fake ones at the start and even have Finkel? What was the end? What was the evil plan? It was the Rikishi, Rikishi, Rikishi.
Was it more? From what I ascertained that there was that Triple H had certain balls that he knew the color of that he was picking out, which made sense there. But then, as you say, like then Finkel comes out to pick one, and that would have been surely random anyway. Yeah, I didn't quite get it.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. And we'll move on. Back at Universal Studios, Mankind is sick to his big fat stomach after riding the Back to the Future ride. And wait a minute. The real Mick Foley shows up and he has his very serious voice on. He goes, "Did you talk about my wife? Did you just talk about my family?" And Mankind's like, "But Triple H made me say all that." Doesn't matter. Mankind gets to him, smashes a bin door of his head like Vinnie Jones in Lockstock, beats him up, makes all those cry noises, and just shouts, "Have a nice day, you son of a bitch." Like, yeah, great way to end it.
Great.
And because
great
some of the lines were funny that Vinnie Guy was saying, but then having Mick show up all serious going, "Whoa, talk about my family. Oh, okay. I'm going to beat you up, then I'm going to ride Mickey's Wild Ride."
I loved it. I love Mick Foley turning up and just battering Midian.
Yeah. I hit the elbow off the Epcot Center. And this is it. Big ass pop for a big ass man as Rikishi comes out to take on Triple H himself. Rikishi requests Too Cool leave. He wants to do this by himself. And Slaughter says he weighs 500 pounds, 300 of which is in his rear. And again, Triple H has lots of lovely, lovely comments about some of his runs later on. The Reign of Terror, as it's called, from 02 to 05, when he discovered Batista and ended it all, where he wouldn't make people look good, would crush them all relentlessly. And you go, but who's supposed to rescue you then on top? And very confusing. Doesn't matter. 2000 Triple H. You know, David Tennant Triple H. Just the best. So Rikishi absolutely wipes the floor with him. And we cut to Stephanie, who's doing commentary, with a panicked look on her face. Rikishi just gives Triple H a leg drop on the floor. Rikishi then takes the Jannetty bump, or I guess the Billy Gunn bump on the show, and just to show that he can sell sometimes as well. Triple H brawls on the outside some more. Rikishi knocks him down with the clothesline. And Michael Cole just says, "Hey, if it wasn't rigged, maybe you should have." Like, shut up, plot point. Kishi with the ass in the corner, the Samoan drop, and Triple H just kicks out. And the crowd is now gripped to this. Ooh,
that hell noise, of a near fall.
Yeah, like a Samoan drop. Because you're Samoan and fat. That does way more damage. And they're making those noises that you only get when it's like someone misses a goal from 2 yards away. It's like, like the anguish that if I can't believe he couldn't win. Rikishi drags Triple H to the corner. It cuts to Stephanie just mouth agape, like, "Oh no, oh no." Banzai drop. Stephanie McMahon, "No, please God, no." Triple H again only just kicks out. Phew. Crowd chant, "Bull poop." Not happy with the finisher being destroyed, but Rikishi goes, "Don't worry, I've got another finisher." Triple H walks right into the sit-out pile driver. Triple H squeezes out to hit the pedigree. Oh, no, he doesn't. I'm telling lies. Backdrop. Then he walks right into the Samoan super kick. 1, 2. Oh, the shoulders up. And again. Oh, just the wave of anguish that hits the crowd. Oh, you bastard.
They're just Kishi. So into this. It's
yeah, I'm getting into this. Just reading it. Sat down. The seagulls are chanting. Kishi tries a blind ass drop, but Triple H moves with just half a second to go. And that's enough for Stephanie, who throws a chair in and distracts the ref. Kabang. Chair shot. 1, 2. Rikishi kicks out.
Crowd, on their feet.
Crowd going banana. Triple H is now furious with the referee. Crowd chant Rikishi like he's their dead brother. Triple H just blatantly decks Rikishi with the title in front of the referee to keep the title, to stay champion. Crowd hugely deflated at that. But the moral victory goes to the big for two. Triple H gives him some more chair shots after the match. Triple H yells at him while he's down. But then Kishi pops up like Jason effing Voorhees to go after him. So Triple H pegs it. Triple H seen on the aisle just going, "Whew, yeah, God, I'm glad I escaped from that." And DX backstage go, "Oh man, if only we'd been there to help, Triple H wouldn't have struggled so much." And then Rikishi and Too Cool dance as Triple H fumes and goes, "I'll get you next time, gadget." Awesome. A+, 5-star, awesome moment, awesome match. Tom,
this
agree
is
with
how,
me.
With 100,000%. That's how you make a star. Like, imagine it. Like, if Big Show had had that match with Triple H, if Test had had that match with Triple H, It would have made him. This made Rikishi. And what sucks is, like, he won't get that close to the top of the tree for a while. Like, he is in a mid-card tag team, which will have flights of fancy near the top, but he certainly won't get, like, a run at the champion. He certainly won't get a title feud for the WWF title. Other things will happen. Other great things will happen. But this made him. It was so good.
Yeah, it's like, hey, Triple H, we need new guys. All right, say no more. Let's give him 10 minutes. Have him do everything that he needs to. Sorry, I got distracted by the birds saying, hurry up. I'm like, yeah, all right.
But isn't it funny how much of a wealth of difference there is between Triple H wanting to put over somebody and Triple H being forced to put over somebody? Like, there is such a reluctance with people like Test and Jericho for Triple H to work with them. But when he wants to work with somebody, he will make them a star. Same with Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar in this day and age is very much the same. If he wants to work with you, he will make you a star. If he doesn't, then good luck. Just get through it.
Yeah. Yeah, for every Braun Strowman, or as we call him, 2020 Test, there's... God, who else has Brock put over?
Drew McIntyre.
Oh, good. Well.
We're not even at WrestleMania. And we may not be for a while. But the way that Brock Lesnar has positioned Drew McIntyre is worlds away from anything he did with Dean Ambrose, with Braun Strowman, with anyone like that.
Yeah. Yeah, love this. And I probably as a kid was probably like, tell me, brother... Like, brother, come watch us. Rikishi's won the title.
We all just got into
it. Yeah, get it, Rikishi, yeah. Awesome. And, yeah, and again, Triple H had to blatantly cheat to return. Well, no, he lost the match, technically. As you're calling out, another tick there in the DQ column. But, awesome. Yeah, this is the first in a fantastic series of SmackDowns that we... get to watch for you, the lovely people at home watching this.
Despite the fact that we had 1, 2, 3, 4 DQs on this night. And the longest match was the main event that went 7 minutes. Everything else was 2, 3, or 4 minutes long. Despite that, it was a thoroughly entertaining show.
It was. It makes up for the fact that the British Bulldog, the Hall of Famer, was not here.
Yeah, I think we're done with Bulldog, aren't we?
No, he's still going to be around.
Oh, brilliant.
There's a little show called Royal Rumble 2000 going to happen.
Oh, lovely, 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 lovely.
Yeah.
That's all right then. So what did we remember from this show, Matthew?
Oh, but Rikishi, Howard Finkel, the balls.
It's Rikishi.
Yeah. That's a good impression, though.
Thank you, mate. Okay. You remembered Rikishi. I did as well, but I also remembered this was the night where we discovered the Mean Street Posse's finishing moves. Wow, they've got finishers. That's incredible. Me and my old schoolmate, James Hughes, we used to laugh about Pete Gass's gas mask. We tried, as you would when you were at school. We tried to learn how to do it properly. I don't know why we got so obsessed with using Pete Gass's finisher, the gas mask. But we tried to figure out how it worked. But I remember this being the key night that we discovered that. What did you forget from this particular episode?
Well, I've already said the Mean Street Posse thing. I'm going to say that Hardcore Holly was winning matches with the Falcon Arrow. Before this became a joke, before it was Hayabusa's finishing move and everything else like that, Hardcore Holly was beating people. Like, actually beating him with the Falcon Arrow.
I forgot the Kurt Angle Rock match, actually. I forgot how beautifully those two meshed. And how close that Kurt Angle came to beating The Rock. He won by DQ, but there was certainly a lot of lovely chemistry between them that kind of made me think, okay, I want to see them do more stuff down the road.
Yeah. Just enough.
Just enough. So that sums up SmackDown for this week. Math, I'm hoping that next time we do this, you're sat close enough for me to touch your face.
Oh, I hope so too, Tom. And thank you very much for being patient with this. Obviously, if you've listened this far into this, you'll have obviously you're able to put up the quality. Again, it's only just due to all the other things happening in life that's prevented me from going to America, the shops, and even Cultaholic HQ. So hopefully things will get better. But in the meantime, we'll always have the classic SmackDown review. What? Cultaholic Classic SmackDown review. There we go.
How will you be confused
with those other ones?
How will you be spending the rest of your self-isolation?
Trying to fix my computer, so I'm not having to do this in the desk, watching people deliver things next door and being like, yeah, yeah, right, yeah. Just having a normal day, talking about Big Show's failed push in 99. And probably trying to beat Goldline Secret Agent later on.
Amazing. See, there's part of me that kind of wishes for self-isolation because I feel like I really want to break out the N64 and play Diddy Kong Racing.
Right, because I'm like, I would feel guilty doing that any other time, but now I'm like, effort.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Steph!
I know, like,
I can't shoot Baron Samedi. Till the next time, on the wasteland that is planet Earth, he is at Matthew Craig. I am at Tom Campbell. Together via the internet, we are at Cultaholic. We will speak to you next time. Wash your piggy hands. Love you. Bye.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.